Hi, it's Jamie, Progressive number one, number two employee. Leave a message at the... Hey, Jamie, it's me, Jamie. This is your daily pep talk. I know it's been rough going ever since people found out about your a cappella group, Mad Harmony, but you will bounce back. I mean, you're the guy always helping people find coverage options with the Name Your Price tool. It should be you giving me the pep talk. Now get out there, hit that high note, and take Mad Harmony all the way to nationals this year! Sorry, it's pitchy.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
There's nothing like the Rockets championship era intro music to get a new show rolling. With that said, welcome in to the inaugural episode of Locked On Rockets. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. For anyone who doesn't know me, I cover the Rockets for Sports Talk 790, the official flagship radio station of the team. I also write for Clutch Fans and have hosted the Red and Orange Report podcast for the past 2 years. For those of you who do know me, you're probably wondering, what's this Locked On Rockets? Here's the background. David Locke, the radio play-by-play voice of the Utah Jazz, began doing a daily podcast about 2 years ago called Locked On Jazz, and it's grown to be really successful. Earlier this year, he expanded with a new show called Locked On NBA, featuring numerous high-profile guests and covering the league as a whole. Both shows have done very well, so the thought was this: why not expand to the NBA as a whole with a network of local shows for each team? David's chosen a handful of great media members around the league to lead the charge on this, and I'm honored to be his choice here in Houston for the Locked On Podcast Network. So what's different about this, you might ask, relative to podcasts like our Red and Orange Report? Well, rather than lengthy analysis pieces, the goal of Locked On Rockets is just to be a concise daily roundup of what's going on with the Rockets. For roughly 15 to 25 minutes per day, this will be your daily news briefing for the absolute most timely news and information relative to the team. It's an ambitious project, but it's one I'm personally very excited about, and I hope you guys will stick around for the ride. With that intro out of the way, let's talk basketball. We know the Rockets have done most of the objectives that they sought out to do starting July 1st when this free agency period opened. They signed Ryan Anderson and Eric Gordon. Those deals are done. They've agreed to a deal with Nene for the room exception. They have not officially signed that yet, but it's basically done, and he'll be brought in as a veteran presence at center to play alongside Clint Capella. We'll see who starts, but Clint Capella and Nene are going to be your two big men in the middle. And then in addition to Anderson, Gordon, and Nene, they use the rest of their cap room to renegotiate James Harden's contract. He's going to be paid about $9 million more per year the next 2 years, but it guarantees him at least through 2019 and possibly through 2020. So the Rockets, for the most part, are done as it pertains to the $40 to $45 million in cap room that they entered July with. The one thing that's still obviously left on the table is the Donatas Moniunas situation. Whereas they renounced the rights to Terrence Jones and some of their other outgoing free agents, they did keep Demo's rights. He's a restricted free agent. And so now we're deep into July. There aren't a ton of free agents left. To be clear, his cap hold is about $6 million. That's what the Rockets are on the books for. If he were to sign elsewhere, or if the Rockets wanted to use that money elsewhere, they certainly could still, you know, either renounce Demo or let him go and then use that money. However, this deep into free agency, it's tough to imagine there being that many other options, especially relative to someone like Moniunas that they still see as having a really good NBA potential. So I think that's still their objective, but the finances of it have definitely changed based on the new guys they brought in, but more importantly, the Harden renegotiation. So with that in mind, I want to get our first guest to the new show on. His name is David Wiener. You might know him on Twitter as Beam a Thug. Of course, as he says, he's the furthest thing from an actual thug. But what he is an absolute salary cap guru, especially as it pertains to the Rockets. He's a great guy, and if y'all will stick with me for just a second, I'm going to get David on the phone and get his input on where the Rockets stand and what these deals they've got done, how they relate to the Moniunas situation and other things the Rockets may do for the rest of this offseason. So hold on just a second. I'm going to get David on the phone. David Wiener, what's up, buddy? How are you?
Doing all right, Ben.
Welcome to the inaugural Locked On Rockets podcast. First ever guest. I tried to give you a little bit of a plug going into this segment, but for anyone who doesn't know you already, why don't you toss out your Twitter handle and tell people you know, the kind of stuff you do. I think Daryl Morey may have once called you assistant to the general manager.
Yes, I'm kind of the Dwight Schrute of the Houston Rockets.
Yeah.
I'm not an MBA expert by day. I'm an attorney in Houston, but I guess by night, or maybe even sometimes during the day,
yeah.
I dabble in the salary cap. I'm kind of an amateur capologist, and do periodic salary cap updates for ClutchFans.net, and usually tweet about salary cap related issues specific to the Rockets, and sometimes generally. My Twitter handle is @BemaThug, which is a long story that
yeah.
we don't have time for today, but certainly not thuggish by any stretch of the imagination.
Yeah, I think that's a safe assessment. The one thing I was talking about before you came on was, of course, the big moves have already been made. They've signed Ryan Anderson at the four. They've signed Eric Gordon as your, you know, secondary playmaker in the backcourt. They've renegotiated and extended James Harden's contract, signed Nene with the room exception. So more or less, you know, you looked at them coming into July with $40 to $45 million in cap room. Now they've spent most of that. The one thing that's still out there on the table is Donatas Moniunas and his salary situation. Right now, of course, he's a restricted free agent. He's, you know, they're trying to negotiate a deal, but right now he has a cap hold of close to $6 million as they try and sort through the negotiations. Given the other moves that transpired, the fact that they've already used the rest of their money, do you think that this makes them more likely to keep Demo or less?
I think it makes it a lot more likely that they keep Demo. In order to give Harden his extension, they needed to renounce the rights to all of their free agents. However, they opted not to renounce Demo. They left his about $5.7 million cap hold on the books, used the rest, almost all of the rest of the cap room to renegotiate and extend Harden's deal. And teams tend not to do something like that unless they're either adamant about retaining the player or possibly using him in a sign-and-trade deal. So I think either they will bring Demo back at almost any cost or potentially use him in a sign-and-trade package if they're going to make a bigger trade. That's probably not very likely. It's possible that a team like the Brooklyn Nets or some other team with a massive amount of cap room still available to use could just throw a massive offer sheet at Demo that's just not worth the Rockets. It's not the value for the Rockets, and they might choose not to match. But my guess is that they'll match any reasonable offer and maybe some somewhat unreasonable offers for him.
Yeah. My take was the same as yours. I think it makes them more likely to keep Demo because now that you've used most of your cap space, you're looking at just his cap hold of $6 million. If you were to renounce him or he were to leave, that's basically all you would have. And there's not much better you can do with that $6 million than, you know, use it on Moniunas. It's not like you can go somewhere else in the market and replace him with a comparably talented guy.
Right. I think, you know, the only other comparable talents on the market are other restricted free agents. And if you threw an offer sheet at one of those guys at $6 million, their incumbent teams will just go ahead and match. So you're really not going to get comparable talent with that much cap room.
Yeah. And there's still just looking at it from a basketball perspective, I would say there's still definitely a role for him with the Rockets because you look at them up front. You know, you have Ryan Anderson at the four, but I think you'd probably like to limit him to maybe 32 minutes a game, given, you know, injury concerns and potentially, you know, a defensive mismatch in certain situations. And then at the center, you know, Nene is a 20 minutes per game player at this point in his career. And Clint Capella has never played more than 20 minutes a game. So, you know, even though you have three big men under contract, it seems like there's still a pretty good basketball fit for Demo if they can get a deal done.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think they'll also play Michael Beasley at the four as well.
Yeah.
But I think Demo's got kind of a unique skill set that he can switch between the four and the five. He's got kind of post moves where I think you will see Anderson get some post touches. You will see Nene get some post touches, but I think Demo could be another post threat for them. and long-range shooting. So yeah. You kind of have all that wrapped in one package, hopefully with a good back. But but the Rockets might not be holding their breath on that.
Yeah, and of course he'd also be instantly the best passer among the big men, and that's a big deal in a Mike D'Antoni system. Just looking at it from a value standpoint, I've been looking over the past week or so at the deals that have been signed because, you know, the market, the deals over the past week are most comparable because a lot of the money has dried up. The two comparisons I would say for Demo, I look at Myers Leonard, another, you know, sweet shooting big man in Portland, got what, 441, I believe. And then Festus Ezeli got two for 2 years, $16 million. So my guess is somewhere maybe in between those, you know, that $8 to $10 million a year. I don't know how long, how many years Demo could get or how many years he wants, but it kind of seems like Ezeli and Leonard might be good templates for the value that that Demo could command. Does that seem fair?
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable estimate. With Ezeli, too, he had major injury concerns, which limited his market. And in fact, his two-year deal, the second year is actually a team option, so yeah. It's even more team-friendly than just a two-year $16 million deal. There's some thought that one of the reasons you're not hearing anything about offers for Demo other than injury concerns could be that the Rockets might have kind of a wink-wink deal with him before the start of free agency, yeah. That they would re-sign him at a predetermined number. So it is at least within the realm of possibility there is some number that has already been agreed to that may or may not be in line with how the market ended up playing out.
Yeah, that's fair. And it's worth noting that Demo, for most of July, at least what we can tell by stalking him on Twitter, Mata Yunus says he's basically been taking the Houston Grand Tour. You know, he's been to Killens, he's been to Minute Maid Park. He doesn't seem like a guy that's been taking a ton of visits. So the conspiracy theory might have a little bit of validity to it. Trying to think. One thing that's interesting, he's going to bring you your fourth big man, assuming the Rockets are able to retain him, as we said, to go with Ryan Anderson, Capella, and Nene. And one thing that's come out over the past week from multiple sources that's interested me is the Rockets' interest in Andrew Bogut. And this was, of course, before they struck the deal with Nene for the room exception. Apparently, Daryl Morey, the GM of the Rockets, called the Warriors and was willing to take Bogut into cap space, basically the same thing that that Dallas and Mark Cuban did. And the Warriors basically gave Bogut the choice of, you know, the Rockets or the Mavericks, and he chose the Mavericks, and the Rockets moved on from that by signing Nene at a much cheaper rate. But the thing that really interests me about that, if they would have signed, or not signed, if they would have traded for Bogut, Bogut makes $11 million. Nene, signed with the room exception, only makes 2.9. So there's a gap of more than $8 million that really, when you look at how the Rockets allocated their money this offseason, that's where the Harden renegotiation and extension came from. So what's interesting, I can't imagine that the Rockets valued Andrew Bogut so highly that they wouldn't have extended James Harden. So what I take out of looking at the Bogut interest, and we've had multiple reporters report on this, so I'm thinking it's legitimate. What it kind of tells me was that if Bogut had chosen the Rockets may have had a deal to ship out more salary to make room for James Harden's renegotiation. That's my conspiracy theory as it pertains to free agency these past couple of weeks.
Yeah, and you may be right. I'm not exactly sure they would forego extending Harden just for an Andrew Bogut caliber player, although I actually have a very high opinion of Bogut from a defensive standpoint. But I think between being able to quickly line up Nene, and really your opportunity cost is the full $11 million,
yeah.
Because Nene, with the room exception, it's kind of tacked on at the end after you use all your cap room.
Yep.
Either they aren't able to renegotiate and extend Harden, or you're looking at something along the lines of renouncing Demo's rights.
Yeah.
Probably having to deal out, at least a KJ McDaniels and another salary. Maybe you have a deal for Brewer or Reeves or Beverly, something like that. But, yeah, you definitely would have to move out some pieces in order to create the cap room to add Bogut if you were also going to be extending Harden.
Yeah, and that's what intrigues me, because I would be surprised, not blown away, but surprised if they valued Bogut so highly that they would, you know, they'd value Bogut more highly than Nene plus Demo, if it would have been as simple as just renouncing Demo and then fitting Harden's cap into there. It's possible. I'd just be surprised. I think the more likely scenario to me is that they felt like they could move a Corey Brewer or someone for cap space. And that's what kind of leads me into my next topic, which is 2017 options. You wrote a great article on Clutch Fans talking about the impact of, you know, the new contracts, Anderson and Eric Gordon, and Harden's renegotiation on 2017. I'll let you summarize that. But basically, with these deals, what you were saying is that the Rockets no longer have financial ability right now to go out and, you know, land a max caliber player next summer. Of course, that's the goal. When they re-signed James Harden, they said that they wanted Harden's future secure so they'd be more attractive in the future to, you know, attracting more elite talent. But it seems like to me that both with this Bogut thing and then also the way they're positioning themselves that for 2017, that they have some confidence that if a max player wants to play in Houston, that they can trade the requisite salaries to make it happen.
Yeah, I think that you're absolutely right that from a cap room standpoint, the Rockets are no longer in a position without making multiple trades to create max cap room. You know, they're all the players that currently have their contracts on the books. You also have to factor in things like if Demo signs a new deal, he's likely taking up a chunk of cap room next summer. They have a first round pick in next year's draft. He'll take up about $1 or $2 million in cap room. You don't know if Onuwaku's going to sign a multi-year deal. He could be eating in the cap room. You know, presumably they're going to exercise their team options in October on Decker and Capella, which are lock in their 2017-2018 salaries. So there are a lot of salaries that are going to be on the books. And even if you wiped out a couple of salaries, you traded away some, it's going to be very difficult to just get to max cap room with, you know, a minor deal. You're gonna have to make some significant deals to create that. But to your point about the Harden extension, I think had they not made that move, which was the primary move that ate into potential max cap room, you weren't going to be able to attract major free agents because they would look at the Rocket situation that Harden would then have only 1 year left on his deal and not really be looking to sign there, which I think is a situation that Oklahoma City is going to be facing over the next few months with Westbrook.
Yeah. So, and just to me, yeah, go ahead.
Oh, sure. But from a cap room standpoint, especially if they re-sign Demo, they may have to look to sign and trade for a free agent. They may look to trade for a player who's under contract next summer, or they could make trades to open up room just by trading out salaries. But I don't think they're going to go into the summer of 2017 with cap room at their disposal. It'll be more an avenue that can be created through other transactions.
Yeah, and I would argue that the Rockets are set up fairly well for it, especially when you look at Pat Beverly and Trevor Ariza. Those contracts signed under the old, you know, under the old system before the cap exploded this year. You know, the Rockets have pieces they can move, so it's not a dire situation. It just seems like there's more of a, you know, there's an emphasis around the league on culture. You know, whereas a few years ago it was about the cap flexibility. Now, you know, you're seeing more and more situations like Durant with the Warriors where, you know, these max free agents, they want to go to established situations. So rather than giving them, you know, customization, it's more just the mindset now seems to be basically make your team as stable as you can, bring in as much talent and wins as you can, and then, you know, figure out the math if and when you need it.
Right, and a parallel could be drawn to, although it was not ultimately successful, last summer the Rockets went into free agency with really not much cap room to speak of, but they were at least a semifinalist for LaMarcus Aldridge.
Yep.
And the route they were going to take to acquire him was going to be through sign and trade with Portland. And, you know, from what I heard, they had actually had a package deal at least on the table with Portland that was at least being listened to. had LaMarcus ultimately chosen Houston. So I think they'll take a similar route next summer.
Sounds good. David, thank you so much for the time. I'll let you toss out your Twitter handle again, and then anything you may be working on the rest of the summer for ClutchFans.net.
Sure. Again, my Twitter handle is at BimaThug, B-I-M-A-T-H-U-G. I just had a recent salary cap update for Clutch Fans, and we'll probably do another one later in the summer as things unfold. We find out what happens with Demo, Onuaku, if they make any trades, but probably won't be for at least a couple months.
All right. Well, thank you for the time, David. We'll be talking to you soon, okay?
My pleasure, Ben.
That's good stuff from David Wiener, a personal friend of mine, and a guy who I'm sure will be a good friend of our new Locked On Rockets show. I thought he did a good job of breaking down the financial case for Donatas Bonifacius and why it's more likely that, you know, the young power forward stays with the Rockets in the aftermath of how free agency's gone. Just looking at it real quick from a basketball case, though, I thought David hit the nail right on the head. You do need a fourth big in this system, especially given how unproven Clint Capella is and, you know, the veteran status of Nene. And I think people around the Rockets really, and I'm talking the fans here, really underestimate what Bonifacius can bring to the table. You know, Dwight Howard missed half the season in 2014-15. Donatas Bonifacius was your only proven big for most of that year, and he was at least average, if not above average, as a power forward on both ends. He could defend, he could stretch the floor on offense, he could swing the ball. You're one season removed from him being an above-average big man in the NBA. And that has a ton of value. You're not going to do better than that for the price. And I understand he had back surgery, and back surgery in the NBA is always a very big deal. But it's really a situation where at his age, he's still a young guy in his mid-20s. You want to gamble that he can find that. And there are guys that have had back surgery. It's typically the second year after back surgery where they really find it. That's this coming year for Donatas Bonifacius. So if the Rockets can get him on a reasonable deal, especially if he goes the Festus Ezeli route and needs to prove himself on a short-term deal, that's great for the Rockets. They could use the minutes, and it's great for Bonifacius, but it's a system that he can excel in. You know, if there's one thing that a Mike D'Antoni offense needs, it's ball movement and bigs who see the floor the way Bonifacius does are rare. We saw before free agency that Bonifacius and D'Antoni had lunch together, I believe, at Donatas' home. I think they're a good fit for both sides, for the coach and the player. So if there's a financial deal to be struck, this can potentially be a steal for the Rockets. I don't think many people out in the Rockets Twitterverse are counting on that much from Donatas Bonifacius, but there's still a lot of upside at his age. The other thing to consider, of course, is the landscape of the Western Conference. I think we all agree and that the Warriors, the Spurs, and the Clippers are going to be a tier better than the Rockets. I'm going to have an episode later this week looking at, you know, kind of where the Rockets fit in. But for now, I think we can agree that the Rockets are, you know, after those top three, in that mid-tier, along with teams like Utah, Minnesota, Portland, and the one thing that, and Memphis, for that matter, and the one thing that those types of teams have are a lot of big men. You look at Memphis with Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph. You look at Utah with Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors, and now Boris Diaw. There are a lot of big bodies that they can throw at you. So I think if you're the Rockets and you go into the season with Ryan Anderson, who we know is a below-average defensive player, Clint Capella in his third year, having never played more than 20 minutes per game, and, you know, Nene in his mid-30s, that's a little dicey. You do have some names like Montrezl Harrell behind them that might could surprise, but you really want more proven experience, and that's something that Bonifacius, if healthy, can bring to the table. These teams that are going to be competing with the Rockets for the 4, 5, 6, 7 spots in the Western Conference, they have deep, deep stables of big men. And if you're the Rockets, I think you would like to have at least 4, given the youth and inexperience of Clint Capella, guys that you can trust up front. So not only does Bonifacius help you from a system fit and a value fit, but he fits with exactly what the Rockets need relative to their competition. So there hasn't been a deal yet. Deals with restricted free agents in the Rockets typically take a while. I go back all the way to the days of Kyle Lowry and Luis Scola. Daryl Morey is notorious for letting the market dictate the value for these players, and so that can lead to an awkward dance for 3 or 4 weeks as they kind of just wait and see what happens with other teams. Keep in mind, if another team, let's say the Brooklyn Nets, that was David's example, were to sign Monty Unis to an offer sheet, their money would be basically handicapped for 72 hours. You know, the Rockets would sit and take the 72 hours to decide if they wanted to match. And that's what happened to Brooklyn when they tried to sign Alan Crabb from the Trailblazers. You know, the Blazers molded over for 3 days and eventually decided to match. Well, Brooklyn's money was tied up for that 72 hours. They couldn't do anything with it. So that's why these markets take a while, is because players have to, other teams have to know that there are no other options out there for the team. So before they're willing to kind of potentially hold up their money and put everything on hold for 3 days. So now we're going to see some movement. It's possible that there's just a deal between the Rockets and Monty Unis. He hasn't been on a lot of visits. He's been in Houston. So there's certainly a case to be made that, you know, maybe a deal gets done and he can start going to workouts with the rest of the team. But for now, it's certainly not known. And so you just hope for the best, because on multiple levels, he really fits with what the Rockets need. Now, besides the Monty Unis situation, the other recent contract development with the Rockets was the signing, or re-signing, if you want to go back a couple of years, of Pablo Prigioni. And Prigioni now, of course, is 39 years old. He's certainly not looked at as a long-term player for the Rockets, but he definitely did have flashes with the Clippers last year. Ironically, Prigioni was responsible for the Rockets being in the playoffs. The big game down the stretch that kind of put the Rockets over the Jazz for the 8th spot was when the Clippers rested everyone and went in with, you know, Pablo Prigioni at point guard and Cole Aldrich at center, and went into Utah and shockingly beat the Jazz. That was what turned everything in Houston's favor. So not everybody's thrilled with that. Of course, there's a lot of Houston fans that did not want to be in the playoffs, given that it cost them the draft pick that went to Denver in the Ty Lawson deal. But Prigioni can still play a role. He's a sharp mind, great for setting up your offense, which that matters a lot in the Mike D'Antoni system that prioritizes ball movement. He's a good defensive player, just a very sharp guy. It's a good influence on younger players. And even so, with the market where it is, we're now in the, you know, the dog days of free agency, where you're seeing more and more players go for minimum or near minimum deals. There's been a lot of people that are underwhelmed. There are certainly some people that remember Prigioni from the role he had 2 years ago, the team that won 56 games and went to the Western Conference Finals, and, you know, are excited to have him back. There are others who see the Rockets bringing Pablo Prigioni when more higher upside point guards, I'm going to say Jarrett Jack, Aaron Brooks, players in that tier, went to other teams for what seemed like a better deal. And I'm just going to tell you, I don't know if it's better or worse, I'm just going to tell you where the Rockets are coming from. I think we can all agree that the Rockets a year ago were a team that was less than the sum of their parts. And, you know, they had talent to be substantially more than 41-41, but the chemistry obviously was not there. And so when you look at reestablishing positive chemistry, that's one thing Mike D'Antoni has said throughout this offseason and continues to stress, you want guys that are going to know their roles. And so when you look at the backcourt rotation for the Rockets, there's really not a ton of minutes if everyone is healthy. There's 96 minutes at the two guard spots. Well, you certainly plan on James Harden playing about 38 a night. So that's going to leave about 58 for the other two spots. In an ideal world, a lot of nights, Pat Beverly and Eric Gordon can easily justify playing close to 30 minutes a night, and you don't have a role for that fourth guy. Now, that's not always going to happen. There are injury concerns with both Beverly and Gordon, and you want to manage minutes when you can. But I guess what I'm getting at is that a lot of nights, you are not going to be able to guarantee minutes. And so if you bring in someone that has higher upside than Pablo Prigioni, what happens if that player is unhappy with his role and his inability to get playing time? So it's a dicey situation. Yes, you could bring in more upside than Prigioni, but would the player be willing to take a lesser role? That's what you don't know. So I'm happy with Prigioni because I see him at 39 years old. He's a good influence on a team that's built to win now, and he's not going to be upset if he goes a night or two without playing. I think that's a big consideration for the Rockets. Beyond that, I just always liked him. One of my funny stories in all my years covering the NBA, before game two of the 2015 playoffs in that Rockets-Clippers first-round series in which the Rockets came back from a 3-1 deficit, they were down 1-0. The spirits were pretty low since the Rockets unexpectedly lost game one to the Clippers, who were without Chris Paul. And I was getting there a few hours before the game, around the same time as some of the players, and Prigioni got in the same elevator as me. And it's always funny to be around Pablo when he's not in NBA mode, because he doesn't look like an athlete at all. Of course, he's a small player, but he looks like a businessman. He's got his little roller bag of a suitcase, and you know, he's just dressed like a businessman. You would think he's going to a business lunch rather than to an NBA game. And, you know, it's all fine and good. He's a nice guy. He's always great to deal with from a media standpoint. Well, anyway, we get on the elevator, and you know, during the day, you can't just hop on the elevator. They need a pass because it's generally just Rocket staffers, and so they'll swipe, and they can go wherever they want. Well, when it gets closer to game time and players, media members, whoever needs it uses the elevator, the security guards are typically supposed to turn off that switch to where anyone can use it. Well, Pablo and I went on the elevator, and I guess the security guard had forgotten to swipe, but so we got on, and it didn't let us go down to the locker room level, but we also couldn't get off. Basically, the elevator was jammed, and we were stuck in that elevator. And, you know, I was panicked. I didn't think that we were going to die or anything, because, of course, we're in Toyota Center, you know, and it's an NBA player. Of course, they're eventually going to come after us. But I've definitely heard of people being in situations where elevators, you can get stuck for an hour or two, and, you know, here Pablo's got a game to play, and, you know, when are we going to get out? And, you know, long story short, it ended up only being about 5 minutes, and, you know, he radioed up, and someone from the Rockets called from their offices. We went all the way up. They swiped us down, and everything ended up being fine. But the interesting about it, you know, I'm sitting there wondering, what are we going to get off? What comes next? Pablo was unflappable. That guy was just cool as a cucumber. He was just, you know, he wasn't really bothered. I told him, I told him good luck tonight. I hoped he was ready. He's like, thank you. I hope we'll need it. And, you know, he didn't exactly seem like the typical athlete, which is a lot more boisterous, a lot more confident. He was just very even keeled about everything, about being stuck in the elevator, about his outlook for the game. Of course, he was going up against Austin Rivers, not Chris Paul. That's why I may have expected him to be a little more confident than saying, you know, we'll need it when I said, when I wished him good luck. The Rockets thankfully did end up winning that game. But you know, he's just a very level-headed presence. And so when you look at a Rockets team that's very much wanting to recapture good vibes, build back the chemistry that seemed to have eroded in the past year, I think that's where he fits. And so does he have enough upside relative to a Jarrett Jack or an Aaron Brooks? I don't know, but I don't think the Rockets are looking for upside. They're looking for more of a steady hand. And so for that role, Pablo Prigioni is a good fit. And keep in mind, at the minimum, if they deem, you know, someone else necessary, they can still go and add those. You can have up to 20 players in the offseason on your roster, and you can sign them all for the minimum, and you can sort it out later, you know, once you get to training camp. And thankfully, that's one thing Les Alexander has shown a willingness to do with the Rockets. Their owner is willing to spend, is willing to eat the money to have competition in training camp and make sure that the best possible players make the roster. So just because you signed Pablo Prigioni at the minimum, it doesn't mean you've stopped adding point guards. Maybe someone else comes available later and you can sign one of them, and then Pablo and that guy can battle it out in training camp. It doesn't mean that it's over. I just get the sense the Rockets wanted some stability, something of a proven commodity behind Pat Beverley and, you know, kind of the fourth wheel in that backcourt. And that steadiness is what Prigioni can bring to the table. With that, I think that's a good place to wrap up our first episode of Locked On Rockets. Thank all of you for joining us. David Wiener especially, Bima Thug, our first guest for the show. Of course, we covered a lot of ground on this show. But I hope you guys will make this a part of your daily lives. We're looking to make this the place for, you know, live and local content with the Rockets, trying to make it as timely as possible, bring it to you every day. So I hope this is something you enjoyed. If you're interested in reaching out to the show, the Twitter handle is @LockedOnRockets. If you're interested in advertising, you can reach the show at LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. And you can reach me, Ben Dubose, at my Twitter handle, which is simply @BenDubose. So with that said, I think we'll sign off on this episode, and stick with us because we're going to have more good and unique Rockets content throughout the week. Good night, everybody.